From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Happy birthday tonight, by the way, to Tommy's producer and mother, the late Catherine Danheiser. She would have been 100 years old tonight. Former Navy. 100 years old. Happy birthday, Catherine. I know you're looking down on us. Here's what's happening. Two police officers have been shot in Louisville, Kentucky tonight as protesters flock to the streets to rally against the death of Breonna Taylor. Demonstrators turned out in droves hours after a grand jury handed down charges against one of the three officers involved in the March raid inside Taylor's apartment, with none of the charges directly involving Taylor's death. Now, Taylor, a 26-year-old African-American emergency medical worker, was shot five times by officers who entered her home using a no-knock warrant during a drug investigation. But the state attorney general, Daniel Cameron, has clarified that the officers did knock and announce themselves before entering. The use of no-knock warrants is now banned in the city. No drugs were found in the search. Sad story there, but protests are breaking out all over the country tonight over the situation. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, said that he and his team are cautiously optimistic about developing a coronavirus vaccine and predict it could be approved in November or December. Sure still sounds awfully close. President Trump's campaign is discussing contingency plans that would involve bypassing the result of the November election. Geez, the report delves into possible scenarios if President Trump apparently loses the 2020 presidential election but does not concede, noting that although we're used to electors being selected based on the popular vote, nothing in the Constitution says it has to be that way. The president's contingency plans to bypass the election results and appoint loyal electors in battleground states where Republicans hold the legislative majority. Let's check in with Howard Bloom, who is not a supporter of this president. Howard, this is still uncanny. It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable, and here's how it works. Back to the Atlantic magazine, which is on the Democratic side of the aisle, and they are reporting that the Trump campaign has a way to win, even if President Trump loses in the popular vote. And here's how it works. There was no such thing as a popular vote back in 1787 when the Constitution was written. So the Constitution says that the president is elected by a group of electors, a group that we call the Electoral College. Now, that's the group that put Donald Trump in office in 2016, despite the fact that apparently Mr. Trump lost the certified vote by over 2.8 million. But here's the trick. As you just hinted at, according to the Constitution, the electors in the Electoral College do not have to be chosen by a popular vote. In fact, when it comes to choosing electors, the Constitution says it can be done whatever way a state legislature dreams up. Meanwhile, inside sources have told The Atlantic that the Trump campaign is setting up contingency plans to keep Donald Trump in the White House even if he loses. In those plans, the state legislatures, controlled by Republicans, will declare that the popular vote in their state has been marred by rampant fraud. Then the legislatures will say that to correct this condition, the legislatures will appoint Electoral College members themselves. Now, yes, picking the electors themselves is something the Constitution says that the state legislatures can do. Now, since 29 of those legislatures are Republican, and only 19 are Democratic, the Republican legislatures will pick electors who will vote for Donald Trump, and Donald Trump will win. Now, how will the legislatures justify this? The president is doing the groundwork for them. He says that if he loses, it'll be because of the, quote, the greatest election disaster in history, close quote.
But what if he wins?
Well, if he wins,
then it's all okay.
It becomes applicable. It's a heads I win, tails you lose situation. And the great difficulty with this is that we, and you could hear this in your voice, I think this is something on which we might agree, and it is that this delegitimates the entire process of popular election. And it threatens to turn slowly but surely this country into a one-party state. Now, who has one-party states? Kim Jong-un has a one-party state. Xi Jinping has a one-party state. Vladimir Putin, for all practical purposes, has a one-party state. And we do not want to become one of those.
Now, the president, I think, Howard, and thank you for your report, if he loses, needs to concede and step aside. Simple as that. Or this whole system collapses. Wall Street's main indexes fell sharply on Wednesday after data showing a cooling of U.S. business activity and the stalemate in Congress over more fiscal stimulus heightened concerns about the economy, while the coronavirus pandemic remains unchecked for people. Previous research finds that when people base their self-worth on their financial success, they often feel lonely in their day-to-day lives. But a recent study demonstrates this isn't the entire picture when it comes to career-minded individuals. Researchers at the University of Buffalo and the Harvard Business School say the stress to keeping succeeding cuts many people off from the world around them. The findings show that social networks and personal relationships play a major role in achieving a positive mental health. Preserving those connections while trying to achieve challenging goals is key. So financial struggles and success can lead to loneliness, but stay above that. Let's check in with registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock for his take on the economy these days. Hi, Mish.
Hi. It's been a wild ride here.
Whew.
The S&P at the beginning of the year fell 20%. It gained it all back. And now it's been on a decline here for the past few days. And after all of this, the S&P is about where it was when the year started. Go figure. It's a very, very uneven recovery. Existing home sales came out yesterday, the highest in 14 years. If you look at air traffic, people traveling, it's down about 75% from a year ago. So we've got huge winners and huge losers here, George. I'm also looking at reports of advanced retail sales, gas stations down, of course, department stores down, general merchandise down, of course, Amazon and the non-store retailers up, food and drinking places down. I mean, we still have COVID social distancing at restaurants that I'm going to. I think they've actually overdone this here now a little bit. Motor vehicles and parts are up. And one of the reasons why housing is doing so well is the Fed now owns a third of all the mortgages, and they're manipulating the interest rates lower for mortgages, trying to keep parts of the economy strong. George, it's a mess, if you ask me.
I think so too, Mish. And let's hope the mess goes away. A Massachusetts construction worker's love of black licorice wound up costing him his life. Eating a bag and a half every day for a few weeks threw his nutrients out of whack and caused the 54-year-old man's heart to simply stop beating, according to doctors. Tom Cruise will officially take on his biggest stunt yet. You know he does his own stunts. In October of 2021, next year, when he travels to outer space to film a new movie, the Space Shuttle Almanac has tweeted that previous reports that Cruise would lead the first movie filmed in outer space on the International Space Station coming to fruition. The 58-year-old actor will be joined by the Bourne Identity director Doug Liman next year as part of Elon Musk's Axiom SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule. Together, they'll head to the ISS and begin production on the first major movie ever shot in space. And although the movie doesn't yet have a title or a plot, it will mark Cruise's most ambitious stunt in a decades-long career of death-defying on-screen moves. How about that? Up next, not by fire but by ice, Robert Felix joins us. Are we in the mists of an ice age? And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. We will take your calls next hour with Robert Felix, author of Not by Fire but by Ice and Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps. Robert is a former architect. He became interested in ice age cycles way back in 1991 and spent the next 8.5 years full-time researching, writing about the coming ice age. Robert, welcome back, my friend. How are you under all these circumstances?
I'm doing very well, George. Thank you very much.
I understand you have moved on. Where'd you move to?
I have. You know, I used to live in the Seattle area all these years, and I just kept thinking, you know, if I'm telling people that an ice age is coming, then what in the devil am I doing staying here? Last year I moved south. I moved to Texas.
Huh.
And I moved to a part of Texas. You know, during the last ice age, certainly not all of the world was covered with ice.
That's true.
And so I'm in an area that I think is going to work out just fine. Plus, it's right now with all of the political stuff going on, I'm kind of glad I'm out of the Seattle area for that reason, too.
You and I have been talking about this for at least 17, 18 years now. Have you changed your thoughts at all? Are we in this ice age?
No. You know, we talked way back when you were in St. Louis.
That's right. Doing my Nighthawk show. That's right.
As a matter of fact, there are several astrophysicists. Now, I'm not saying they're following me, but that would be crazy. But there are several astrophysicists who say that we are in a little ice age at the very beginning of a little ice age right now.
Well, you believe that too, though, don't you?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I think it's already started. It's just that it takes a while for it to gear up so that people understand what's happening.
Well, correct the confusion, too, for Robert, because in ice ages, you do get very warm summers, correct?
You can get warm summers. The main thing that I see with the entry, at least, to an ice age, especially a little ice age, is that you have the rainy season last a little bit longer in the spring, and then you have the rainy season start a little bit earlier in the fall. And it doesn't take very many weeks earlier on each end of that to mess with your food supplies. And that's the biggest concern I have with entering a little ice age.
Why do you believe we are headed this way?
Well, because of some of the things I'm seeing. Well, right now, just in the last couple of weeks, we had surprise winter storm, dropped 17 inches of snow in Wyoming. That was on September 11th. Kansas City smashes cold record set more than 100 years ago. That was on September 11th. And then they did that. They smashed the cold record 2 days in a row. Denver had the earliest freeze on record going back more than 150 years. That was on September 10th. New record lows in Minnesota on September 10th. New coldest high in Texas. Now, it was cold where I was, but in Midland, Texas, the coldest high was 14 degrees lower than it ever had been before on record. That was September 9th. I mean, the list goes on. Winter snow blankets parts of Alberta on September 9th. Record cold, record snowfall in South Dakota September 9th. So it's happening right now. It's just that people, because it's happening in various areas and not in the entire world, why we kind of laugh it off and say, oh, well, you know, that's just there. But I see that happening more and more, both in the fall and in the spring. So, but the other part, as I said, there's many astrophysicists.
They're joining your team, aren't they?
They are. You know, they don't mean to be joining my team, but at least I was saying it first, and now this is really feeling pretty. Well, I shouldn't say it's feeling good, but it at least verifies what I've been saying.
Did the last ice age end about 11,700 years ago?
It did. And there is, that's part of the reason that I'm concerned, because there is a cycle to ice ages. There's also a cycle to magnetic reversals.
Now, is the ice age based on the sun or magnetic reversals?
Well, I think it's both. Any mini ice age, which I think that we're heading into right now, would be based on the sun because of the low sunspot count. There's a huge, you know, if you can ask me about that later, but it has to do with the sunspots. But there's also my concern about a magnetic reversal, because our magnetic field strength is declining rapidly, and I think that we're headed for another magnetic reversal, too.
Mm-hmm.
But magnetic reversals, there is a cycle to magnetic reversals, or at least magnetic excursions, that return almost like clockwork about every 11,500 years. And those magnetic reversals correlate with periods of glaciation.
Now, when you talk about a mini ice age, though, Robert, what does that mean exactly? What's a mini ice age as opposed to...
Well, a mini ice age, we had a mini ice age essentially in the 1600s. It was a time, a lot of people have never even heard of sunspots, but it was a time where there were no sunspots on the sun for about 80 years. And the temperatures declined and ice started crawling out of the Alps. People know that because there were farmers that applied for reduced taxes because their pastures were covered with ice. But during the Little Ice Age, which was in about the 1600s and around that time, the Earth didn't cool that much more, but it cooled enough that crops were lost in the fields because farmers couldn't really get their horses out into the fields and they couldn't plant because it was too muddy. And then come the fall, they couldn't harvest because it was too wet. And literally millions, and I do mean millions, of people died of starvation.
I bet.
And I fear that we could be looking at another such thing. That's a mini ice age. The whole world didn't get covered by ice at all, but the weather was really miserable. In fact, I have a thing right at the top of my website or close to it, Burning Climate Skeptics at the Stake, is during that period, they were blaming humans for the bad weather, just the same as they do now. I don't think it has anything to do with humans. I think it all has to do with cycles. But anyway, there were so many crop losses in Europe and really around the world, but in Europe, they figured that around 50,000 people were burned at the stake. They were called witches.
That's right.
Because it was their fault because of the weather. And I hate to see us doing that again, blaming humans for the weather.
They found a woolly mammoth in Siberia that had been frozen to death instantly. It still had food in its mouth. How fast do the temperatures plummet during an ice age?
Well, a lot of people, a lot of scientists have said that ice ages begin slowly over, thousands of years.
Just a gradual plummeting.
Thousands of years. But there was a project called GRIP, Greenland Ice Core Project, way back in the early 90s. But what they did is they drilled cores into the ice in central Greenland that they went down deep enough, I think almost 2 miles deep, where they were able to look at ice that had accumulated during the last 250,000 years. And they discovered that every single ice age, I mean every single one of them, began in less than 20 years. And they did that from climates as warm as today. And then, boom, 20 years later, they're in an ice age. So, it can happen fast when it happens.
When we come back, Robert, I want to talk about your other work, Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps, because that is tied into an ice age as well. Robert Felix has got a couple websites, iceagenow.info and evolutionaryleaps.com, all linked up to coasttocoastam.com. What got you into this in the first place, Robert?
That is the hardest question anybody can ask. I don't know, George. That is the darkest.
You went from being an architect to an expert on ice ages.
Yeah, I hate to say I felt a calling, but I just felt something. I was taking a writing course, and I wrote a short article, fiction, about what caused an ice age, and I said it was because of an asteroid strike.
Well, your dedication is truly remarkable. Robert, let's talk about magnetic reversals when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. It sure is, and we'll be back with more with Robert Felix as we talk about a coming ice age. We'll be taking calls with Mr. Felix next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. Toward the latter part of the program tonight, Seth Shostak joins us from SETI talking about the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And welcome back, Robert Felix, with us. Robert, your other book, Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps, ties into ice ages. What exactly are magnetic reversals?
Well, magnetic reversals are times when north changes place with south, essentially.
A total flip-flop?
Well, yeah, no. The globe does not flip-flop. It's just that the magnetic north moves south. So compasses right now that point toward the Arctic would then point toward the Antarctic, toward Antarctica. And that is where I tie everything together. You know, when I started writing the book, I did think it was an asteroid that killed the dinosaurs. But then more and more as I studied it, I began to think it was a magnetic reversal. And the more and more I studied, I discovered that magnetic reversals, far more than could be just coincidence, had occurred in sync with mass extinctions. And many of those magnetic reversals had occurred in sync with our planet's descent into glaciation, into catastrophic glaciation. So that's what the first book is about, Ice Age Now. But I learned also that entirely new kinds of plants and animals appeared in the geologic record almost immediately after extinctions, time after time after time. And those new plants and animals had arrived almost as if from nowhere. They had no known ancestors. They had no intermediate life forms to explain their sudden presence. And so that's, I kept on finding that stuff when I was writing, not by fire, but by ice. And it just led me, inexorably to evolutionary leaps, because when I started studying paleontology more, I learned that many, many scientists, many paleontologists absolutely don't go along with Darwin and his idea of slow evolution. As many paleontologists say that evolution in the past has worked very suddenly.
Why does there also seem to be several camps with regards to global warming? I mean, it is truly unbelievable how you have a group of scientists who believe it's caused by man, and then you have another group that thinks it's some kind of solar system, planetary system.
As to why, I think that the global warming pays better. From what I can tell, when the government has been giving grants to study climate, you're much more likely to get that grant if it has something about man-made global warming.
Interesting.
So I think money is driving it.
What causes the magnetic reversals, Robert? Is it the core of the planet that something happens, or what's causing it?
Well, I think it's something called precession of the equinoxes. Because these magnetic reversals or magnetic excursions occur approximately every 11,500 years. Well, our planet rotates. We all know that it rotates.
Sure.
But then its axis of rotation also rotates, and most people don't know that. But right now, the Earth does not point straight up and down like we would like to think. It doesn't point straight north and south in relation to the sun. It's on an angle. And so our axis of rotation is on that angle. But that axis of rotation slowly turns in a circle It takes about 23,000 years for that to happen. Actually, somebody's going to say, no, it takes 26,000. Yes, it takes 26,000. But in relation to the sun, it takes about 23,000 years. And anyway, right now, the Earth's axis of rotation points toward the star Polaris, toward the North Star. But 11,500 years from now, it'll have rotated far enough. It'll point toward the star Vega. And then 11,500 years from then, it'll point toward Polaris again. And it looks to me like magnetic reversals correlate with that. Now, I'm kind of alone on that. I'm just hanging out there, so I'll wait for the scientists to catch up with me. That's, to me, that is what causes the magnetic reversals, is our axis rotation slowly turn. It's running out of, it's no longer in sync with the solar system, and then snap, it has to snap back into place again. And then 11,500 years from now, it'll do that again.
Now, what does it do to, you know, migration of birds and things like that?
Well, that would affect them. I mean, right now, because our magnetic North Pole is moving, it even has affects pilots. Airports have to realign some of their signs out on their runways just so that pilots know where they're going. So it affects humans that way right now.
An interesting take on that. Now, with the magnetic field reversals that happen so slowly, how cold is cold during an ice age?
There was just a new thing that came out today that I saw, is that, that's a good question, how cold was the ice age? Average global temperature, now this is average around the whole globe, was about 11 degrees Fahrenheit colder than it is now, 6 degrees Celsius. But that's around the whole globe. You know, with almost all of Canada covered by 2 miles of ice, yeah, it was awfully cold up there.
I bet.
But a lot of the world wasn't that much colder. Scientists figure that the climate of Chicago moved to Georgia. But Florida wouldn't have been much colder. Texas probably not a whole bunch colder. The equatorial rainforest belt, temperatures would have remained almost the same as today. So the main thing about an ice age, to me, they don't call it a cold age. They called it an ice age. So the main thing to me is that we're going to be seeing more and more and more snow in the north, which then builds up as ice. And we're going to see sea levels falling. That's probably a little bit of a surprise to you.
What about glaciers?
Glaciers? Oh, they'll be growing. They'll be growing.
Because they're melting now, aren't they?
Not all of them. No. I mean, we keep... The media doesn't tell you about the ones that are not melting, but there are many glaciers that are growing. There's glaciers growing right here in the United States, believe it or not. You probably remember when Mount St. Helens erupted. What was that, 1980 or 81? But there was a huge glacier on the top of Mount St. Helens, and that glacier has been making a fabulous comeback. It's called Crater Glacier. Crater Glacier is now bigger than the glacier was before Mount St. Helens erupted. There's also glaciers growing in northern Washington. There's glaciers growing the Himalayas. You probably, we don't hear about that much, but even in the Himalayas, glaciers, you know, we were told that the Himalayan glaciers were going to be all gone by 2035. And so you don't hear much about it, but those glaciers have been growing like crazy.
Interesting. 57 people died in that 1980 eruption.
Yes, I give Harry, what was the guy's name, Harry Truman, I give him credit for just staying there and not leaving, but it did kill him.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I think that was
it.
Not in 1980, though.
Was it? Yes, 1980. Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the guy named Harry Truman. I thought you were talking about the ex-president.
Oh, no. There was a guy in Washington. His name was Harry Truman, and he owned a resort on a lake. I can't remember the lake, but he owned a resort on a lake probably 30 or 40 miles away from Mount St. Helens.
It's called Spirit Lake.
Spirit Lake. Okay, very good. But anyway, the authorities kept ordering him to move. They ordered him to move. And he was an older guy. He'd spent his life building that resort, and he was not about to leave. But he ended up being, his resort was covered with about 80 feet of debris. I give him credit for sticking there anyway.
I think I would have left.
Yeah, I would have. I just found the glaciers growing in Western Himalayas. That includes Mount Everest, K2, and Nanga Parbat. They are the biggest mid-latitude glaciers in the world, and all of them are either holding still or advancing. Not only are they advancing, but 87 of those glaciers have surged forward since the 1960s. So the news that we get is not always true. You probably have heard that.
In an ice age, Robert, kind of explain to us a season. Kind of take us through it. What do we expect?
Well, every part of the world is going to be different. You had mentioned earlier that, yeah, some parts of the world will be warmer, some parts colder, but the jet stream is what will be changing. And the meridional flow of the jet stream will actually, and you've maybe seen it in the last few years, but it dips down into the United States. And if you compare this coming winter, I'd like to invite people to do this, is look at where the jet stream goes during some of those winter storms, and then look at an ice age map. I do have an ice age map on the front page of my website, but it is uncanny how that jet stream matches the ice age map that you'll see. So just watch that. But as that jet stream moves south into the United States, or more southerly, there are areas of Siberia that will be warmer than normal. But the big thing, again, is that we will be seeing sea levels drop. And sea levels, I mean, we're talking a lot. During the last ice age, sea levels were more than 400 feet lower than they are today.
Jeez, that's huge.
I know you've had people on your program who've talked about underwater cities that they have discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely believe that is 100% true, because during the last ice age, the sea levels were so low that the Mediterranean Sea was cut off from the ocean, and the Mediterranean Sea became a lake, and it was no longer salt water. And then I think the Baltic Sea is connected to that. And
so the ancients built there, and then, boom, they get flooded out again.
Yeah, but there's ancient cities down there, and I absolutely believe it. And this happens again. It happens time and time and time again.
What about underwater volcanoes, Robert?
Oh.
How do they contribute to this?
That's what I consider what triggers the ice age. You know, you were talking about, how can so many scientists talk about global warming?
Mm-hmm.
And I say it is underwater volcanic activity that heats the seas, not humans. And that underwater volcanic activity picks up as magnetic field strength declines. Our magnetic field strength declines as we head into a magnetic reversal. And somehow that seems to release a lot of above ground volcanic activity, but at the same time I see underwater volcanic activity going like crazy. So you've got,
it's like a slow simmer, isn't it?
Say that again.
It's like a slow simmer, a boiling pot.
Oh, it is. Those underwater volcanoes are pumping water that's 2,100 degrees hot into the bottom of the ocean. So what, I mean, that's how the oceans get warmed, is from that underwater volcanic activity. Now, when I started writing the book, scientists thought there were only 11,000 underwater volcanoes in the entire world.
How many are there?
Now, scientists realize there are more than 3 million.
3 million underwater active volcanoes?
No, there's like a, there's, I think, like 196,000 they figure are active. But even then, 196,000 active underwater volcanoes pumping lava into the sea that's 2,100 degrees hot has got to make a difference. And then if you start increasing that, well, then you're going to be having more. Now, as the volcanic activity increases, you have the warmer water, and but the above water volcanoes are putting more ash into the sky, so they're cooling the skies while the ocean is warming. And that is a recipe for an ice age. Colder skies and warmer waters, because then that evaporation goes into the sky and comes back to us as giant snowstorms.
How high are some of these underwater volcanoes?
Oh, some of them are 3 miles high.
Oh, my God.
Believe it or not, they're still underwater. But there is an underwater ridge of volcanoes that, separates the American continent from the Africa. It's about in the middle, and it's called the Atlantic Ridge. But there's a lot of, it's part of Iceland, by the way. Iceland is a place where...
And you could see these volcanoes underwater?
Well, no. Iceland is part of the Atlantic Ridge, but it's above water. But it's still the same. It's the same group of volcanoes. That group of volcanoes is more than 40,000 miles long. Believe it or not, and those many of those volcanoes are as much as 3 miles high, and yet the tops of them are still a half a mile below the water.
Do you think Atlantis was real, and that it maybe sunk because of these volcanoes?
I think Atlantis was real. I'm going to guess that Atlantis was over toward Indonesia during the last ice age, when the sea levels were so low. Indonesia was a part of the continent. And my guess is that as the sea levels rose, which they do after every ice age, that they, I'm guessing, but one guesses it's good to another, but I'm guessing that's where Atlantis is. And so it's probably not covered, it's probably only covered by 400 feet of water. But no, I don't necessarily think it sank. I think the water rose.
Isn't that the same thing?
Well, no. The land would have remained just the same. Well, like, you know, going back to the United States, Florida, during the last ice age, Florida was twice as big as it is today because sea levels were so low.
Probably now, closer to Cuba, wasn't it?
Yes. You could have taken a rowboat to Cuba.
Jeez.
Yeah. And New Jersey, the shoreline was 100 miles further east than it is today. So, you know, all of that land got covered as sea levels have risen. Those sea levels have been rising for 11,500 years without any help from humans.
Here we go again. Robert, your first book was what, Ice Age Now?
Not by fire, but by ice.
Not by that one. Not by fire, but by ice. Are these books still available to folks?
Not by fire, but by ice is sold out, but the ebook is available on my website.
All right. Okay. Well, stay with us, Robert. Let's come back and take some phone calls next hour with you as we talk about ice ages and magnetic reversals and all those fun things right here on Coast to Coast AM. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com as well. I'm George Norrie, back with Robert Felix on Coast to Coast AM.